you would, please turn to 1 Peter chapter 5. We were going to look at that Sunday night, and we didn't get there. Surely it's well enough that she said, now be sure and let people talk. And I said, well, there are quite a few people that talk Sunday night. She said, yes, but be sure to let them talk. And what I'd like to start with is if you have a question or if you have a comment. The lesson, I kind of fumbled it as I went through, but Sunday morning, the sermon, God willing, will be the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace, Ephesians 4:3, and other verses. And that's what it will be, is I will let the Bible speak Sunday morning. I'll try to just be the medium through which it comes. Comments, questions by anybody? Yes, Peter.
1 Peter what?
1 Peter chapter 5, verses 1 through 5. Now, the reason that I want to look at that, and I'm on the passages that relate to elders, and we'll look at some of them, but I love this passage because of its embodiment of the whole scope of what those who are our shepherds are doing for us. Who would like to read that for me? Yes.
This is from Nicky. The elders who are among you, I exhort, I who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion but willingly, not for dishonest gain but eagerly. Nor is being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. Likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud, but he is gracious to the humble.
Thank you. Isn't that a wonderful thought? The binding together of us. And Peter does both the positive and the negative. Do this, don't do that. He qualifies himself by saying, I am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ. And then he says, and a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. As we look at the terminology that's used here, he starts out with the idea, shepherd the flock. And that is so important because that eloquent young man, Peter, said, we are like sheep. You know, we wander off. We act like we don't know where we're going. First thing you know, we don't know where we've been or where we're going. We get lost. But the shepherd keeps us together. So he says, shepherd the flock of God, which is among you. And then he uses the term serving as overseers. Anybody have any idea what an overseer does? Pardon? Very astute. Looking over, overseeing, knowing what's going on. I've actually known of elderships that had no notion of what was going on in the congregation. I've also known of preachers like that. A preacher friend of mine years ago, another friend was there. He said, "Herschel, how's everything going?" He said, "Oh, it's going great." And it wasn't a month before that congregation was in total turmoil. It had elders. But people didn't know what was going on. In this sense, the overseer, the bishop, is looking over what's going on. And so he says, "Shepherd of the flock which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly." Did you ever know someone? Okay, go ahead.
Here. I was just going to say, McGarvey talks about, he says overseers, he starts breaking it down. He talks about it in Nehemiah.
Right.
The overseers that were watching over them build the wall. And then David also had overseers in his army. And all these other different occupations that required overseers. And defined it as somebody who makes sure a task is done.
Right. And people come to mind that I've known a good friend who was an elder in Boise, Idaho, and he was also an excellent builder. And I worked with him on several occasions. He was so soft-spoken, there were times I had to get under his helmet to figure out what he was saying. He wasn't overbearing. If you made a mistake, he'd help you correct it. And he was very good at explaining things. But he was in charge of the job. Do you understand what I'm saying? And every good leader in society or in the church who knows how to look over, to oversee, to pastor what is going on as a shepherd. And they should have lived long enough to know better. Now some folks just get old. They don't get better. Just because a man is old, I'm not saying anything about the women, but just because a man is old doesn't mean that he's capable of doing things. You need someone who knows how to guide and direct those around him. Then he uses the term not by compulsion, but willingly. And certainly not for dishonest gain. Filthy lucre.
Is that money?
Dirty money. Oh, you can have a lot of money. Abraham was rich. But he wasn't covetous.
There's nothing wrong with having a lot of money.
There you go. Right.
If it's not first in your life.
Right. Let's just
have $1 billion or have $100. If it's first in your life, that is your God.
And Jesus said, "He that's faithful in little will be faithful in much." So it has to do with our character, not how much money we have. And of course, compared to the rest of the world, we're all rich. If we just took what we have in our pockets, even though we don't use a lot of loose money, and put it in a pile, there's somebody in the world who think, man, I can live on this for years. Sure. There should be, and the word sober comes up later in our study. And soberness has to do, for instance, if there's someone who's endeavoring to be an elder, to be a shepherd, to be a pastor, and he has two people in front of him. One is his very best friend, and the other he hardly knows. And they have a story between them that needs to be resolved. If he can resolve that without being prejudiced, then he's sober. That's the idea. It doesn't have anything to do with alcohol. Did I see a hand back here? Sordid game. Right. Right. Okay, David?
I think there's one thing that we have not done in our culture, in our manifestation of the church, that was done in the early church based on 1 Timothy 5, verses 17 and 18. It says, the elders who direct the affairs of the church well are worthy of double honor, especially those who work in preaching and teaching. For the scripture says, do not most of your eye toward is treading out the grain, and the worker deserves his wages. When I read this, that tells me there were elders who were supported by the congregation.
Right.
But they were full-time preaching and teaching.
And there needs to be today. Yes.
So when they're saying don't do it before the game, they say don't do it for the money.
Right.
It doesn't mean they're not right. The church's support. We don't see that very often. But I think that's one of the reasons that warning is there. Because that was the practice.
Absolutely. And there are people, you know, there are people who fall into that trap. I've known men who just couldn't handle the power that they were given to make decisions for other people. And most of the time, it does deal with money. Mammon, the riches. Jesus, of course, has warned us about that. Don't lay up riches for yourself on earth, but lay your treasure up in heaven. There are just so many thoughts and passages that have to do with that. I have advocated a number of things in my preaching career. I hoped early on, and I think I've done what I could to get it done, that the church would have men who maybe had served for 10 years as an elder. And then the church decided, and I can name you one or two that did this, the church decided to put this old guy who no longer had an income on the payroll. And he had a certain assignment to do. Many times it was visit the hospitals constantly and keep them informed. Because elders can't do everything. They just can't. And some of them aren't that good. You might have a man who's qualified and very good at doing several things. But it terrifies him to go into a hospital room. If you were in the hospital and my wife came to see you, you don't know how fortunate you are. Because she just panics. And back when kids had their tonsils taken out, and you could smell the ether for half a mile, she threw up right along with the kids. And as best as not let her be in there. The poor point about this is, find out what people can do. Don't assign someone, and this is where the good management in an eldership comes in. Don't assign someone to do something that they can't do, or that they can't do well. I talked one man, when I read this word by compulsion, I talked one man out of resigning from the eldership. And I've asked God to forgive me a number of times for that. He didn't, but he should have. And he was there because they had two men to serve. They said, "We want three elders. You're in line." And that was the main qualification. So it's very important that the people who oversee, who shepherd the church, and that word shepherd is so, it's so beautiful because of the way it plays out. Take care of the people. Comments now. We're going to do a little more here. Where are you, Mark? Okay. Mark's not listening. Yes, he is. He always is. I love for him to speak too. Okay, that phrase there, not for dishonest gain. But notice the last phrase. What is it? But eagerly. Here's somebody who really, really wants to do this task. And so God has given us guidelines. Now these are not litmus tests about men to serve. But if we look at everything that the Bible has to say about the shepherds and their functions, then we can figure out who can do the job. It's not a popularity contest, but many times it ends up being that. Let's look at verse 3 again, the emphasis here. Nor as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. Now there is a conclusion we're going to look at. But he's saying, don't try to run everything. If this congregation selects an eldership, let's say there are four men selected. This is arbitrary. One of those men will more than likely become a better leader than anybody else. His compadres will recognize that and they'll lean on him. I told you about the elder in Henrietta, Texas, who made everybody mad because he got up and said, "We're the elders. You're supposed to do what we tell you." And he didn't make me mad because I knew him real well. Sure did ruin my sermon because folks left mad. But that's not the job, is to make people mad. The job is to cause the church to function. Let's look at verse 4 now, and then we'll go back. There's lots more to talk about. And when the chief shepherd, notice how the word chief and shepherd, the first letter should be capitalized in your text. When the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. It is so important to realize that it's not a picnic. And it's not an easy job. Even though a person wants to do the task. There's still a lot of work to it, and there's a downside. And you have to be able to go with it. And an eldership that does not stick together doesn't make it. Let me just flash by you here, and then you get ready to raise your hand. I worked for the church in Bishop, Texas. We've been through an awful ordeal. And I had never been to Bishop, Texas, had no desire to go to Bishop, Texas. I'd just come back from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and it was 30 below zero when I left there. I knew it wasn't quite that hot, Bishop, Texas, down there over Corpus Christi. But anyway, one of the elders had connections. He knew about the whole situation. And he called me and said, "Would you come down and talk to us? We want to talk to you. We need a preacher." And I said, "I don't want to come to South Texas. I just left Canada freezing to death." He called me three times. And he said, "Won't you please, we'll pay your expense, just come talk to us." Well, I did. And it was a blessed and wonderful time. That's where God intended for us to recover. These men were truly leaders. This is not a favorite word with Tony, he's a leader, but I say it every once in a while anyway. But one of them in our conversation, sitting in the bedroom on the bed talking, one of them, Brother Bill Dudley, looked at me and he said, "How much pastoring do you do?" I'd never been asked that before. I said, "I do the pastoring that the elders direct me to do. And then I do things on my own. But I feel like that it's my responsibility to do what the elders feel like I can do best." And that was okay. But I need you to realize that there is so much work that needs to be done. And so you do that work in order to get the job done for God. There are things that just good people do here, but sooner or later somebody will jump down your throat if you don't have authorization. They may say, "Who told you could do that?" Now you could be like Landon. When he was 5 years old, we're over at our house, several of us there, his mom and dad, and Shirley and I, and maybe one or two other people, and Landon is just barking out orders and directions. His mother looked at him and said, "Landon, who put you in charge?" He said, "God." None of us ever recovered. But he was so sure of himself. Now, there are people who try to run things that have no business doing that. That's another one of the great responsibilities of those who are shepherds, who are elders, who are pastors. Okay. Comments? Questions? You scared me. Yes, George. Okay.
Because when all things are said and done, somebody has to raise their hand and say, "Yes, I did this," or "Yes, I did not do this."
Okay.
And to be a person who guides another set of people in their Christianity, any type of way, that is an awesome responsibility.
It is. And we need to understand that there are people gifted. God gifts some people to do that. We had 10 deer that wandered through our yard until this family, he's in the army, bought the place and put a privacy fence around it. Well, the deer come through some now, but we had 10 deer that walked in the yard. These folks have a little black dog, and he's a yappinous thing, and he can just be carrying on. He won't even give me the time of day. He will bark at me. But Mateo walks over to the fence, he comes running up to her, sticks his tongue out and his nose through. She loves animals and they love her. She can deal with them. But they have a sense. Horses do too. That's where we get the word horse sense. But there are people who are gifted. We need to look for that as we look through our number. Yes, Mark. Okay. Okay. It is example. That's the power. And I may have already said this. I think I did tell you about a preacher friend of mine who got fired because from the pulpit he said the only authority that elders had was their example. That they were authoritative with the congregation by the example they set for the congregation. And of course, there were folks who didn't like it. So they tried to get rid of them. Yes?
So the whole congregation could use a spiritual example.
Absolutely.
Nobody needs an example. The whole congregation doesn't need an example on how to run.
And that's a valid point. We need to make that. That's the point you wanted to make. That, you know, a three-year-old, if we want somebody just to run things, we'll just get us a three-year-old. They can run the world. If you haven't experienced that, you've really missed something. Yes, David.
Continuing with that, shepherd doesn't do what she's supposed to do.
Okay.
Right.
Right. Right.
I think part of this example is service.
Right. Somewhere between trying to do everything and trying to run everybody and everything, there is this wonderful medium. Let's read, I know our time's running out, but let's read 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 16. I don't know whether there are other copies of this or not, if you don't have that, but 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 16. Who has that? Yes, sir. Father or son.
Here is a trustworthy saying. If anyone sets his heart on being an overseer, he desires his noble task. Now the overseer must be above reproach, the
not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his own family well, see that his children obey him with proper respect. If anyone does not know how to manage his own family, how can he take care of God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may become conceited and fall under the same judgment as the devil. He must also have a good reputation without hiding, so that he will not fall into disgrace and into the devil's trap.
Thank you. That's RSV.
NIV.
That's what I meant. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I said, how far down did you read? Okay. Well, that's all right. We've got enough to look at. It's really important to recognize that there is a trustworthiness by someone who wants to be a shepherd. Is this person trustworthy? And we have the word we'll look at in time. I'm sure Jeff will deal with that. A person who is not someone who just gets mad at everybody all of a sudden. And he talks about them being gentle, not quarrelsome, are a lover of money. Comments? Yes?
Should the elder have every one of these qualifications? Most of them are
together. All right. That is a very good question. And the importance of it is that something I didn't write a note for me down. These qualifications or characteristics are relative. You might know three men, and one of them might be extremely gentle. And somebody else might spit their words out sideways. And they make somebody cry. And, what are you crying about? Well, you sound terrible. You sound awful. You sound mean. You don't want a person who doesn't care about other people. But there is not a single characteristic that is not a variable. We're working toward developing that characteristic. Whether it's gentleness or self-control. There are people who have tried to serve as leaders who really got mad. And there are lots of preachers, and I've been eaten by several of them. So, and, you know, they jump on me, and one of them is about 6'7" tall. And he could have beat me up. He didn't. But I don't. He didn't ever change his ways. He's not preaching anymore. John?
When you keep in mind that these qualifications or qualities, as the translation is, every single one of us are to have these qualities.
Right. That was Don's question. Right. Right.
As an overseer or elder, those men should be showing those qualities in a seen manner above and beyond.
Right. They're mature in all. The person who meets the classification or qualification, if you want to use that term, I don't have a problem with that. These are people who have, to a great degree, met every one of these characteristics. This this helps identify them.
Now, it's not saying that as an elder, you know, you're all the qualities here, you're just 100% all.
Correct.
You're not
right. Right.
But still should be very decent. I guess you're saying.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be,
yeah.
We're going to have all these ones. Like I say, we're going to be. Then we'll have these ones. But still should be better than those.
And, you know, they're growing. I see the hands. That's wonderful. Just wanted to point out to you that Jesus said in Matthew 5 and the last verse, "Be therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect." That's the goal. So we're always striving for that goal. Now, who had their hand up first? Peter, I'll get to you. Since you're the oldest.
In verse 6, it says, "There does not be a given comfort unless they be seated and fall into the condemnation of the devil." How can you tell, how long do they have to be in the faith for them to no longer be considered good?
Okay, and that really is an important question, but that's why you go through a process of looking at people. And I thought a minute ago, in 1958, I went to Abilene Christian Lectureship. And Mid McKnight was talking, and he's just a fireball. He was a crop duster pilot at that time. I remember him saying a couple of things. One of them was that crop dusters lasted 10 years. They either quit or got killed. Because they get so arrogant in flying their crop dusting plane. But he said, you know, we come to this lectureship and we go home and it takes the elders 6 months to beat us back into subjection. And he was kind of kidding, but I have been in places where I told the elders, if you don't quit knocking these men down, basically deacons, one day they'll be just like you. They won't get up. Fortunately, they didn't fire me right then. In fact, they didn't fire me at all, but I didn't convince them. We had other hands up back there. You got two.
Maybe I missed it, but I don't see the word qualifications, qualities, characteristics in God's Word. I think that's us trying to capture
yes.
What's in 1 Timothy
yes.
3, Titus 1,
yes.
Peter 5. Those are humans trying to put a number up.
Right.
It's not a biblical concept. I think what is a biblical concept, somebody over here was saying, is what are the existence of the fruits of the Spirit?
Right. Right. And people who try to nail down, they say, well, people have to meet, men have to meet these characteristics to 100%. And there was only one man who ever lived on earth who did that. And that was Jesus. Got one over here, and then we'll go back over here. Right. Right.
Very
still have jobs to do.
And we need teaching on that. That's part of FL was concerned about getting the congregation prepared. And this is some of the stuff that I wanted to talk to you about. And I hope this has helped. Did you have something, Eric? Okay. You were just... Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Right. And I have an example of that. I probably won't ever get to use it, but that sometimes comes back to trouble people about someone. Well, I used to know him. I've seen him beat the tar out of somebody. Well, very well may have. Right, right. Yeah, suppose he was in his teenage years. Does that disqualify him now? Well, that's where our judgment and my firm conviction is that God gave us these instructions so that we could figure out what we needed to do and select people who can do the job. Julie? Okay. Okay. Right. Yes. Yes. The first qualification is the desire to do that. Right. Right. And God gave us all of this. I'm done when I get through this tale, okay? We had a fair booth in 1972, Idaho State Fair in Boise, Idaho. Several churches went in together, and our theme that year was, the Bible is the answer. And then we had questions and answers, and we talked to people. And a guy came up, and he stood about 15 feet away, and I was in the booth at that time. He said, so, the Bible is the answer. What's the question? I said, what's the question? What? What's the question? He said, war. I said, the Bible is the answer. You cannot ask a question that the Bible does not have the answer for. Naturally, I converted him, took him to the field and baptized him. No, I didn't. Yeah, right. A child is children, right? Could not empathize with Abraham when God told him to kill his son, to offer him as a sacrifice. It's probably because you don't have children. So, amen. We got... Then there was a comedian who said, if you don't have but one child, you don't qualify as a parent. You always know who did it. Yes, it was. I used to love to quote him. Yep. Not something that can be done or not done. It is a definitive expression. Right. He's not very. He doesn't meet very many of these qualities, but. He's got lots of money. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I think the whole point is respect.
Right.
Where you are and you walk.
Right. And we're doing well, folks. Just keep speaking up. Right.
But some are really more gentle than others.
Right.